The Opal Dragon, James. A. Calderwood, 4 Glenis. I would like to thank Mark Evans, a movie producer in Adelaide, for his assistance melding this book and hints with the storyline. This book is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents either are the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously. And any resemblance to any actual persons, living or dead, events, or locales is coincidental, all rights reserved. No part of this book may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic or mechanical, including photocopying, recording, or any information storage and retrieval system, without permission in writing from the copyright owner. All rights reserved. Chapter 1. The Philippines. Ali had been following the old silver merchant for 3 weeks to try to work out a pattern to his coming and goings from his shop to his home in the early evening. He found that the merchant varied the route taken to his home during the weekdays, but on Saturday nights, when he had to carry the large kit bag with the week's takings, he would take the most direct route to his house. There was a dark, deserted part of the trip in a small lane going past unused old warehouses. The broken windows gaped out from the crumbling walls behind the toothy bars. The cobbled laneway leading down this lane was too narrow for a car to fit. The only traffic could be the pushcarts and bicycle rickshaw type of vehicles. Trash lay strewn over the cobblestones and heaped against the dirty walls. The fetid air was clinging to the walls and all who passed by. There was a doorway set into a wall just around the corner of this dingy alleyway. Ali had been following the merchant and had run down the parallel alleyway and crossed into the alley and hid in the dark doorway. The steps of the old merchant could be heard hurriedly walking his way toward the hiding place. He was ready to spring out. The merchant quickly passed by, not seeing the hiding lad. With a flying leap, Ali launched himself out of the doorway and, using his shoulder, hit the old man in the middle of the back. The old man tumbled forward using the bag to break his fall. Ali grabbed onto the handle of the kit bag after the old man toppled to the ground. He tried to pull the bag out of the old man's grasp. To no avail, the old man had a strong grip on the handle. The old man started to scream, "Help, thief! Help me, I am being robbed." The old man grasped Ali's other arm and started to pull himself up. His grip was surprisingly powerful. The old man swore at Ali as he struggled to regain his feet. Ali felt that the surprise attack was starting to be turned in the favor of the old man. Ali was in trouble. He let the handle of the bag go, and then reached into his pocket and grabbed the handle of the flick knife he always carried. As he took it out of his pocket, he pressed the release of the knife blade. The blade shot out of the handle. He felt the click as the blade fully opened. He pushed the knife blade into the old man's chest. The old trader let go of Ali's arm and the bag and grasped at the knife in his chest. He let out a loud scream. After a short while, Ali heard the noise of people yelling in the distance. He grabbed the large bag and ran as fast as he could away from the sound of the mob. He could hear the mob stop at the old man, then talk to him, then start to run toward where Ali had left the scene of the crime. As he fled, he knew the area he was traveling very well, as he had lived in this part of town all of his 19 years and had played through these alleys with other children from when he was a child. Ali's mother, Zina, was a local prostitute. He survived by working the markets, pilfering from any unsuspecting stallholder, and being a pimp for his mother. The robbery of the trader was the first try at a real robbery. The rowdy mob noise had abated as he turned the corner for home. Ali could not hear the yelling of the mob now. He was exhausted from running and carrying the heavy kit bag. He could not find the door key when searching in his pocket. He banged on the door of a crumbling old building. He banged again. Finally, the door opened, and a woman in a torn blue silk dressing gown scowled, then said, "I told you not to come home early tonight. I have a customer. Where is your key?" Ali was puffing from the effort of running with the bag. "I am in trouble. I have lost my key, let me inside. Zina stepped back, and Ali ran past her carrying the heavy bag. What have you got there? She yelled after him as he fled. Ali turned back. You will find out soon. He went to his small room and turned on the dim light. He lifted the case onto his bed and then tried to open it by twisting and pulling, but the lock was surprisingly strong. He left the case and went to the cooking room and selected a pointy knife from a drawer in a cupboard. As he walked back to his room, he could hear Zina urging her lover to have more sex. She was desperate to keep the waning numbers of customers who visited her. After some effort with the knife, the lock snapped open. Ali tipped the contents of the case out onto his bed. There were 6 small gold bars and 15 silver ingots, and some finished jewelry with gemstones set in them, and a large lot of banknotes. The wads of money were thick. Ali started to count a bundle of US dollars. There were $5,000. After thinking for a short time, he counted out $1,000 to give to Zina, to help with the finances, as she was having a hard time coping. Zina had been a very beautiful woman in her younger days and commanded high prices for her services. Childbirth, drugs, and now being nearly 50 years old had taken their toll. Her quality clients and generous payments had diminished considerably. There had been some very violent clients. Although he was small in stature, Ali had tried to help Zina when he had been in another part of the house. He would come to help her when he heard the yelling and abuse. He had been assaulted by these men on many occasions. He picked up the kit bag and carried it to the door of the house. He then opened the door, careful not to make a sound, put the heavy bag down, then stepped out into the street and looked each way along the dimly lit street. When he was sure he would not be seen, he pulled the bag from the doorway. Then slipped out of the house, then took the kit bag and headed for the wharf area. He had a special old deserted warehouse in which he used to hide some of the spoils of his small pilfering. The quarter moon was enough for him to see as he quickly ran through the dim streets. He was barked at by a very large dog as he passed a fenced-in area. The dog hit the fence with force, rattling his resolve. Finally, the door with the roofing iron sheets screwed to it to keep out vandals was in front of him. With some effort, Ali pulled one corner of the iron aside. Some of the screws had pulled out of the rotting wood of the door. He then slipped the kit bag inside the gap. He then followed it through the hole. There was just enough moonlight filtering through the broken windows behind the steel bars to navigate to the fallen down inside wall. He pulled a pile of bricks away to reveal a deep niche in the solid part of the wall. He pushed the bag inside, then built a drywall across the entrance to the niche with some of the old bricks. Then scattered the rest of the bricks to look as if they had fallen down onto the floor. Ali pushed the screws back into the holes in the door to make the entrance at least look impenetrable. 3 times Ali banged on the door before Zina opened it. Where have you been? I will tell you later. Are you in trouble? Ali slipped past Zina and headed for his room. A little bit. I will tell you in the morning. I am very tired. Zina's customer had left by now. Zina had second thoughts about confronting Ali. She then turned toward her bedroom. Ali rose from his small bed and washed his hands and face in the basin on the box, which was used for furniture in the corner of his room. After drying himself off with some rags, he walked out to the eating area. It was still quite early in the morning. Zina was heating some food on the Primus stove on top of the cupboard. He pulled out a wooden chair, which made a squealing sound. He sat down at the rickety wooden table. A loaf of bread and a quarter of some cheese was on the table. He broke off a piece of bread from the loaf on the table, then cut a piece of cheese and folded the cheese into the bread. When he finished eating the food, he then reached into his pocket and took something round out. Ali walked over to Zina, who was watching the Primus stove. He then handed her the roll of $1,000. She counted the money. There are $1,000 in here, she said with an amazed look on her face. I have a lot more than that in the bag, and gold, silver, and jewelry. Ali told Zina about the robbery and how the old man and the mob nearly caught him. I have not looked after you all of these 19 years to have you be killed by a mob, or have you put into jail. Bad things happen to young men like you when they are in jail, things you would not want to think about. Ali was touched by this conversation, as Zina had always cursed him for losing her good looks and being in the way. Zina put her arm around Ali's shoulder and hugged him. He was very touched by the hug, as he had always felt he was in the way. Are the bag and money safe? Ali assured her that the bag was hidden very well in a safe place. Not long after he had left, Zina had a knock on the door. She opened the door to see a police officer standing on the doorstep. Was your son Ali out on the street last night? No, he was home with me all night. The policeman sneered and showed a look of disbelief. Are you sure? Zina then glared at him. I have a witness. Zina stepped back into the doorway further. Who was it? What is his name? I cannot tell you that he is a town official, and I do not want his wife to find that he was here. I would be in big trouble. The policeman grunted in disbelief and shrugged his shoulders. I will be back again, he said in a nasty tone. He then turned and left. He stopped at another house down the street and asked the same questions about the people's son. There was a good crowd at the market. Ali met some of his friends. This was their favorite meeting ground. Yusuf asked where he had been lately. I have been checking a new market on the other side of the town. I have been busy and have found some easy pickings. Someone found some easy pickings when they stabbed the old silver merchant last night. People in the market are saying that the robber got $100,000 in gold, silver, and cash, said Yusuf. Where did this happen? Asked Ali, to make sure he was not implicated in any way. It was in the dark alley by the old warehouse near his home. There is still blood on the ground. Do you want to come and see? No, thanks. What happened to the merchant? I have heard he is okay. The police have the knife. They will have the robber's fingerprints. Ali changed the conversation subject, pointing out one of the new pretty girls working in the stall nearby. He then bid goodbye to his friend and left for home. He had found that the silver merchant had not died. He felt a wave of relief at this news. The police have been here looking for you, Ali. He was taken aback at this news. I am worried that the police have got my knife and could get my fingerprints. I have also lost my house key. If that key was found at the scene of the robbery, the police might be able to match it to our door. Zina thought for a few seconds. I think you should leave town and go to see my sister in the mountains. I have heard her husband has died, and she is living alone. Ali thought for a while. He then agreed to this plan, as he did not want to be caught by the police. Evidently, the old man had recognized him from the market. Zina went to the cupboard and found a piece of paper and pencil, and then wrote the name of the small village her sister Sasha lived in on it. She described to Ali how to get to this village. The village was where Zina had grown lived when she was a child. This suited Ali. He agreed that it would be a good idea to leave town for a while until things died down. He went to his room and packed his clothes, then put them into a Hessian bag, then tied the top with some twine. Zina handed Ali $100 out of the money Ali had given her. As Ali was ready to leave, Zina gave him a kiss on the lips and a big hug. She had tears forming in the corner of her eyes. You make sure you look after yourself. I will miss you. Ali was very touched by this showing of love by Zina, and was a bit teary as he left to walk to the bus depot. There seemed to be a lot of police checking in the markets. He tried to keep from open areas where he may have been seen. Ali walked around the edge of the market and found his way to the bus depot from a small side laneway. Being in the open bus depot worried Ali as he waited in line to purchase a ticket for the bus. He was worried every time a policeman walked by. He tried to make himself inconspicuous as he waited for the time to board the bus by being in a darkened corner reading a magazine from the old book rack. Finally, the driver called for passengers to board the old bus that would pass through the village where Zina's sister Sasha lived. The old Ford bus was full of people and animals. There were old men, women, babies, small snotty-nosed children, some chickens in cages, and two goats at the rear of the bus. The roof of the bus was loaded with freight in bags and boxes. The animal smell in the bus was not nice, but the smell of the tobacco some of the passengers were smoking was revolting. It smelled like burning dog manure. The old bus wound its way around the edges of the steep passes in the mountain, with thick tall trees and jungle, then crossing flimsy narrow bridges with steep drops beneath. The road surfaces were uneven. The old bus would sway from side to side as it moved along the poorly repaired roadway. It was shaking the passengers violently from side to side, with the high load of freight tied on top of the bus. Ali was worried that the old bus might tip over and roll down to the bottom of one of the steep gorges. When traveling downhill toward some of the streams or rivers, the brakes would squeal in protest. The bus stopped at every small town and village. People and animals alighted, more got on. There was even a large pig as a passenger. This pig did not like the idea of climbing into the crowded bus. It finally succumbed to the pushing and shoving to get her on the bus. She was restrained in the rear of the bus by a flimsy wooden gate made from sticks tied together with twine. This was tied to the rear of the seats. As the bus climbed higher into the mountains, the air got cooler. The smelly pig left the bus after two more stops. People on the bus gave her a wide berth, as she did not seem to be very happy after her trip. She was frothing at the mouth and trying to snap at the people. Finally, the bus pulled into the small village where Sasha lived. The small village had a square for the market and an assortment of dilapidated crumbling houses around it, and the same style of old houses led off the square into narrow laneways. An impressive Catholic church took up a large area on one corner of the square. This church was built of dressed square stone blocks and had a tall steeple with a large bell. The church looked very old. The bus pulled up near to the front of the church. Ali and three other people alighted from the bus. Some freight was taken off the roof by the driver and one of the alighting passengers. The driver resumed his seat, then started the motor. Blue smoke poured from the exhaust pipe as the motor revved up. The old bus grated its gears as it drove slowly off along the wide street which led to the road, heading toward the next village. The worn gears whined as the bus picked up speed. The smell of the tobacco clung to Ali's clothes and skin. The clean mountain air was a relief from the stench of the bus. He was unsure as to whether Sasha still lived in the village. He walked along the road and found a small shop. As he entered, a stooped old man came from the shop's rear section and inquired as to whether he could help Ali. Ali asked about Sasha. The old man knew Sasha and described how to get to her land and house plot. The poor lady is very lonely where she lives by herself. She does not come to the village very often since her husband has died. He pulled a small piece of paper off the roll on the shop counter and drew a small map to show Ali the way to the house. Ali thanked the man and left for the trip ahead, carrying the bag of clothes over his shoulder. He headed out along the road the bus had taken, then turned onto a narrow track leading toward a small river. There were small plots of land with thatched roof houses, palm trees, and a few animals. After walking 2 kilometers, Ali crossed the small river on a rickety bridge. There were small rice paddies near this river. Some paddies had animals and people working in them. The road had ruts carved into the surface from the thin wheels of the wooden carts, which were towed by a buffalo in a yoke. Two of these carts had passed by, going toward the village with produce for the market. The woman was stooped over hoeing a field near the small raised timber house with a thatched roof. Ali walked over to her. As she looked up, he noticed a tired look on her once pretty face. Her hands were calloused from the hard daily toil. She looked at Ali with a hint of suspicion. "What do you want?" "I have nothing for beggars, I am very poor." She started to turn back to her work. Ali turned toward her to show his features. "I am Zina's son," the woman looked closely at him. "I can see her in your eyes. Is your mother dead?" He assured her that Zina was not dead and was well. Sasha sighed and dropped her shoulders. "Your mother got into a bad business. Has she changed her ways?" "No, she has not, and as her looks have faded, she has been finding life hard. We all have a hard life, boy. I only grow enough food to feed myself. I hope you are not looking to live here." "I have no money." Upon hearing this, Ali reached into his pocket, took out the money, peeled off $20, and handed it to Sasha. She took the money. "Are you in trouble, boy?"
"Yes.
One of my mother's lovers was beating her, and I hit him with a chair. He has threatened to castrate me if he catches me," Ali lied. "Nothing seems to have changed with your mother then." "Trouble," followed again by more trouble. Sasha looked at the money and then thought for a minute. "I could buy a goat with this money and have milk and be able to sell cheese." Sasha stood the hoe next to a small rock then walked toward the house. "Come, boy, and have some food." As he entered the small house, he noticed that the furnishing was very sparse, but scrubbed clean. Sasha showed Ali where to put his bag of clothes in a tiny room with a thin mattress on the floor. The house had the aroma of something exotic, the spicy smell of food that had been cooked. A hint of curry and spices filled the air of the small house. After fanning the flames to catch the tinder on fire, Sasha lit a small fire in the hob and placed a pot on the flames to heat the contents. The smoke from the fire mixed with the aromas of the food. As the food heated, Sasha collected two bowls from a cupboard on which there was a large bowl for washing. Using a large wooden spoon, she ladled some food into the bowls. "I was not expecting company. I very rarely ever see another person here in my house." "You are lucky there was enough food," she grumbled. The food was a mixture of rice and vegetables. It was flavored with curry and other herbs and was delicious to eat. The bird song in the trees near the house woke Ali early in the morning. For a moment, he did not know where he was. The bird song was different from the din of the town. During the night, he had thought a lot about his first impressions of Sasha. She had seemed to be very grumpy at the idea of having a new house guest. Sasha greeted Ali as he stepped into the eating area. The last of the food in the pot was served up for the morning meal. Sasha smiled at Ali. "I have been by myself so long that I have forgotten what it is like to have another person to care for and to have a conversation to. I thought about this last night. I think it will be a good change for me." He felt relieved at this conversation. "What are we going to be doing today?" Sasha looked kindly at Ali. "I am digging a plot to plant some yams." Ali went with Sasha to the small plot of land she was hoeing and helped her by pulling up some tall weeds. The yams had then been sown into the warm, moist earth. Sasha had shown Ali how to plant the yams. That evening he found that Sasha was indeed a very good cook with the herbs she grew on the small plot of land. Ali complimented Sasha as to the tasty food which she cooked. She was pleased with the compliment. "I have tried to keep up my cooking skills, even though I have been living in the house by myself." Sasha also had a small rice paddy about a half mile away near the river bridge. The next morning, She took him to the river and showed Ali the very small plot of rice growing in the paddy. Ali carried two buckets on a yoke around his shoulders for water for the house. Sasha rolled up her dress, walked into the muddy water, and pulled the tall weeds growing between the small rice plants. Ali put down the buckets and removed the yoke. He then stepped into the soft mud under the water and started to help, following her instructions. After a half hour, he looked down at his legs and saw three slimy leeches attached to his lower legs. He jumped out of the water onto the bank of the paddy. He had never seen a thing as revolting as the slimy blood-sucking creatures. Sasha also stepped out. She also had some leeches feeding on her legs.